Yes, hi, hello, and welcome inside a Friday edition of the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUM. Glad you're with us on the program today. We have a lot to get to as far as things happening over the weekend. A Ball State women's basketball recap. We'll be joined by George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin at 4:25, talking Colts, and Rob Fisher, our analyst on high school broadcasts, will stop by at 4:45 to talk a little bit about semi-state basketball coming up this weekend. But we certainly want to open the show and say prayers and thoughts to all of those affected in the Selma, Winchester, eastern part of East Central Indiana that were affected by the storms last night. And, you know, obviously acknowledging that there is so much help out there, and that's, you know, you never want these moments to occur. But what I have been proud of in moments of tough times is how many people have stepped up to do amazing, amazing things. And so, look, we want to acknowledge it on this program. As far as information and all those sorts of things of how to help, because we have gotten a lot of texts and calls and asking how people can help. And I would say your best bet is to certainly reach out to the cities, reach out to the emergency personnel, and do it that way. It is not necessarily this program's job to do that. So if you want more information on how to do that, or, and you were hoping to maybe get it on this program, go to those proper channels to make that happen. Because truly, 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 there are so many people that want to help based on what occurred with the storms last night. And so, again, you know, never want these things to happen, but the people that are doing good, the people that are doing all the things that you would expect from a human side of things to do, it is just, it's admirable, and you got to be proud of your community that they come together during times like this. So we want to acknowledge that at the very, very top of the show. It is this program's job to talk about sports and talk about the things happening in local sports. So by no means is this an acknowledgement of we don't know what's going on with that, but we want to transition to that because, again, you know, if I don't have the information, I'm not going to put it out there because I don't want false information to be out there in any form or fashion. So, again, there are a lot of sources that if you want to help, if you want to learn more, those sources are out there in the communities of Selma and in between that and through Winchester as well. But certainly thoughts to all of those affected by the storms last night, and we are certainly thinking about you all as we talk on this Friday right here. So, at Mark WMUN, and here's another thing. If you want to and reach out, you know, our station personnel can help you direct in the right direction as well. So if you don't know kind of where to go to help and you want to help, we can try the best we can to get you that information so you can certainly be a part of the help process with all of that. So there is no easy way to transition to sports. There's certainly a lot of local things happening that we are going to discuss again a little bit later on. We'll have Rob Fisher, who's going to be in Lafayette tomorrow for the Wapahani Regional or semi-state in 2A North. So we'll break that down a little bit. 3A North Delta, they are at Logansport. So we'll break that down coming up here in a little bit to give you all of the particulars of, you know, what we think is going to happen coming up this weekend and the historic nature of the fact that both of these schools are back for the second straight year in the semi-state round. And, you know, one of the things, and we're going to get to Ball State women's basketball and some of those other things in a moment, but I guess we'll start here very, very local. And that is... I was doing some research today in preparation for my game tomorrow, which is Fairfield and Delta at the 3A North Regional. We'll tell you the broadcast crews again coming up here in a matter of moments. But I was preparing and looking at a lot of teams that have made semi-state runs before. And then looking at the following season to see what happened. Did they even win a sectional? Did they get to a regional? Did they, you know, and that was a curiosity of mine. And the fact of the matter is, oftentimes, a lot of runs ended in the regional round the second time around for a lot of those schools. So I bring all that up to give you a little bit of perspective that to get to back-to-back semi-state rounds is truly phenomenal. Is truly, in some cases, unprecedented. You know, Wapahani had never been to the semi-state round until last year, and now they're there in back-to-back seasons, which says a lot about this particular group. And, of course, the coaching staff as well. Delta, as we know, has won a state championship before back in 2002 and in the late 90s made a run there as well. So they've had some experience there. But I look back and I didn't see any back-to-back semi-state appearances like that. So, again, it is truly unique. It's unique from the fact that there are two schools in the county doing it at the exact same time and two very different classes. So at the end of the day, truly appreciate that. I mean, again, the outlook is pretty darn positive as it comes to the draws for Wapahani in 2A North and Delta in 3A North as well. It depends on what you look at, but if you look at other semi-state kind of groupings, there is, you know, some of those are much more even, much more, I guess, competitive from 1 through 4. I look at Wapahani's matchup against North Judson and say that's a pretty favorable matchup for Wapahani. Now, let me qualify the whole deal of favorable matchup, okay? A favorable matchup means, look, if you play your style of game and play well, which sounds very, very generic, but is truly important when it comes down to it. We're going to get to Ball State women's basketball coming up here in a moment. They fell in the semifinal of the Mid-American Conference women's basketball tournament in Cleveland. But you do have to play well. You do have to play well in order to get it done. North Judson didn't just get to the semi-state round by default. They had to beat a pretty good Gary 21st century team. So by no means is this a rollover victory, but I feel as though Wapahani had an immense breakthrough last week. And the breakthrough is not that they surprise people, because when you've only lost two games in 28 games, You're not surprising anybody anymore. Isaac Andrews isn't surprising anybody anymore. That group isn't surprising anybody anymore. But truly, Tipton and Wapahani, that matchup last Saturday was one of the better matchups in the state from a ranked standpoint. And just like a lot of people, I felt the same way, that was going to be a very back-and-forth competitive matchup. And boy, was I wrong, and in large part to what Wapahani did in the second half. They took it to another level. I mean, they really did. From the balance, from the defensive side of things, which I think went very unnoticed in the first half of play and last Saturday's matchup against Tipton. And, you know, at the end of the day, you get that win, but it felt bigger. It felt like a breakthrough. And not that getting to semi-state last year didn't feel insignificant, because it certainly did not last year. This year feels different for Wapahani. And so, again, you have to play well against North Judson to get it done. But at the end of the day, I like the draw for Wapahani. And again, we'll see what happens in 2A North coming up tomorrow. So we'll tell you about the coverage coming up in a moment. And then for Delta, it's a little bit of the opposite. They took it to another level during the sectional week. Three wins in a week, and they played incredibly well all the way to a championship victory. And you just felt like, you know, I remember describing it as, man, it kind of feels like 2023 all over again. Because it was the month of February where things really started to click for Delta. I mean, they were a 10-loss team going into sectional play. And not that that's super abnormal, but again, you know, not there's not a lot of 10-loss teams that make the run that Delta did last year, but it was what they did on the defensive side of the basketball to turn defense to offense. I mean, it was just something that really stood out for Delta a year ago. And they looked like that in sectional week a couple of weeks back. They did for a half against Fort Wayne Concordia on Saturday, and then things got a little stagnant there in the third quarter. Got a little dicey with Concordia taking the lead several times in that fourth quarter, and a very fortunate opportunity where Jackson Moores is fouled with 0.6 seconds. You hit two free throws, and you win. But I want to describe it as this. Like, it's not like you're sigh of relief and you got away with one. That's one train of thought. It's more so saying we can win in a variety of ways. You know, defensively, they are on a streak right now that we'll talk about during the broadcast tomorrow that's pretty remarkable as far as defensive efficiency. So you know going in each and every game, Delta's going to defend at a high level because that's the staple of who their program is. But when you aren't able to score the ball as freely as you did the week before and you still win in a 39-37 game, I think that says a lot about Delta. And again, you know, it's a lot more fun when you win to be able to adjust those things. And by the way, this time of the year, you got to win to keep advancing. We understand that. So I like the fact that Delta can acknowledge that maybe they didn't play their best last Saturday, yet it resulted in a win. And you got to be pretty pleased with the fact that you were able to win in a variety of ways. And, it, you know, for the crowd and those watching and those following this team, I would imagine it was a bit of a sigh of relief. And I get that. I understand that. But I like their draw as well. Now, if you look at the Sagarin ratings, which is the most accurate rating system that Indiana high school basketball has, South Bend St. Joseph is ranked just a slight bit above Delta after last week's action. But they're 3-4 in 3A, so it's pretty well put together. And again, schedule-wise, I mean, both of those teams play tough schedules, so we'll see if that ends up being the championship matchup. You got to get through Fairfield first, and Fairfield's a lot like Delta in that they like to control the basketball game on the defensive side of the basketball. So I think they're going to be two really interesting matchups. And I think both of the area teams have really good opportunities to move to the championship game coming up tomorrow night. Now, coverage-wise, you will be able to hear those games on Blake FM. So I want to reiterate where you can hear those games because I know we might have some confusion coming up tomorrow. 96.7. 102.9 Blake FM will have both of those doubleheader of those two different semi-state matchups. So North Judson and Wapahani first. So the pregame will start at 9:25 on Blake FM, and then right after that, we're going to go right into the Fairfield Delta matchup. So the crew that will be at Lafayette, Jeff, Rob Fisher, who we'll talk to here in a moment, Rob Fisher and Jimmy Cook will have the call of that matchup, and then in the Logansport 3A North semi-state, it'll be myself. My name is Mark Forster. And Yorktown head coach Matt Moulton's going to step in the booth with us for the coverage of 3A North coming up tomorrow. Again, that projected tip time is 12 o'clock. So, again, kind of at the mercy of what happens in game number one. But again, that's going to lead yourself right into game number two. And we're going to have both of those on Blake FM. And then, of course, stay tuned to our social media pages to see what happens in both of those games for what the coverage will look like for the evening contest. Looking forward to bringing you both of those coming up tomorrow for the semi-state. Again, I wanted to highlight just how rare it is to have two teams in the county go to the semi-state round. And so we'll have the coverage of all of that. If you have any questions about any of the coverage options for tomorrow as it relates to boys basketball semi-state, check out our Facebook page, WMUN Muncie, or our X Twitter account. You can search WMUN right there, and that's a very easy way for you to find where we will be broadcasting tomorrow. No video coverage. It is just audio, radio only tomorrow. So I'll give you an idea there. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. Yes, I'm battling a cold, and we're battling through. Going to try to be fresh for tomorrow and excited for a second straight year to have the coverage of the semi-state round of the boys basketball state tournament. So this happened about an hour and a half ago. Ball State women's basketball bowing out of the women's basketball conference tournament in Cleveland, Mid-American Conference Tournament. They fall 65-50. And you know, kind of interesting day at the Mid-American Conference Tournament, because number one seeded Toledo lost to number four seeded Buffalo right before this matchup, and you're thinking there's an opportunity there. And there's a lot of different factors here, and it's crushing. It is, because it's amazing. Ball State 28-5, they're out of the Mid-American Conference Tournament. So is Toledo, 28-5. So the two teams that lost a combined 10 times all year long and a combined 3 times all year long in conference play, neither of them will be in the conference tournament championship. And one can only describe that as wacky. But you can also describe that as that's kind of what the Mid-American Conference Tournament is. We talked about it earlier in the week about just how strange things can be. Just how strange conference tournaments can be. And this is the real tough part about mid-major conferences, because you put so much emphasis on that conference tournament knowing that that's the most likely path for you to get to the NCAA tournament. You almost have to be perfect throughout that week to get to the ultimate pinnacle, which is the NCAA tournament. Ball State had beaten Kent State twice this season, and the last time they played, today, Kent State beats them by 15. Ball State got out-rebounded 50-23. Out-rebounded on the offensive glass 17-6. Second chance points were somewhere in the vicinity. I was listening to the broadcast 21-2, and I heard Coach Brady Sowley after the game speak to the Ball State Radio Network about being a little out-toughed. Now, when you say being out-toughed, that doesn't mean the effort was not there. Ball State didn't shoot well. When they got behind, they were trying to get back in the game by winning from the perimeter. It just wasn't there today. So there's a couple of factors here. One, I know it depends on the coach and it depends on the program when you say something like this, but I'm going to say it, and it's my opinion. But in covering the basketball games, it is so hard to beat a team 3 times. And it's so hard to beat a team that is a really good basketball team like Kent State is. Kent State's now 20-10. Think about it. It's really interesting. Really interesting that the Mid-American Conference this season will have 3 teams that won 20 games. So Kent State's by far not a team that you're like, where do they come from? It's not like you lost to a 7 or 8 seed. Kent State's a good team. I truly believe beating a team 3 times in a season is very, very difficult. But what's also strange about this is how well you played yesterday. And we talked to Coach Brady Sowley yesterday. I mean, you played very well in your win against Ohio, or 2 days ago, that is, in your win against Ohio, and you come into this one and just flat out, I just don't think you played very well. You can blame a lot of things. I wouldn't blame a thing. I mean, it's just one of those times where you got to give credit to Kent State. Coach Sally mentioned in the post game about the middle ball screens, and they just couldn't figure out a way to neutralize it. And you know, Ball State had been so good defensively, and Kent State had that wrinkle that really frustrated Ball State. So we're gonna have to see, but I would lead to assume, as Mick Tidrow and I were talking about yesterday a little bit on the program, it's going to be very hard to get in at an at-large bid in the NCAA tournament, losing in the semifinal of your tournament. Again, Toledo's kind of in the same boat. Toledo is the regular season champion, so... you know, the fact that Ball State and Toledo are in the same circumstance, I think the tie would go to Toledo. But, you know, maybe your non-conference play helps. I would assume a WNIT bid will be there for Ball State, but we'll have to see. I mean, a 28-5 team, a team that was 16-2 in their conference, I would imagine the women's NIT would be thrilled to have Ball State. But again, we'll have to wait for that. It's a crushing loss. It is, because you felt like the door had kind of opened. And, you know, we talked to Coach yesterday, loved the confidence and loved the feelings about the team, that they just felt like it was their time. And I got no other explanation than this. The Mid-American Conference Tournament is strange. Conference tournaments in general are just flat-out strange. And, you know, on a neutral floor, you never know what can happen. And unfortunately, today it happened to Ball State. So we'll wait and see and cover everything that happens this weekend, and probably have an answer on the WNIT NCAA tournament coming up on Monday's show. So, all right, when we come back, we're going to talk some Colts and get the thoughts of George Brimmer on everything that's occurred throughout the week. That's coming your way next on the Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. As always, presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. We've got George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin talking Colts in just a second, but I did just seize this perusing Facebook for those of you that have been asking how to help with yesterday's storms in Selma and Winchester. This is from the town of Selma directly on Facebook. They are looking for volunteers for tomorrow starting at 9 a.m. Meet at Selma Elementary outside of door 10. They need people to help clean out debris of neighbors' yards, bring gloves, any empty totes or boxes, and any tools that you think would be helpful. Again, if you're on Facebook, you can search the town of Selma, Indiana. And that's where this information is coming from. I, like a lot of people in our building today, have had a lot of people say, how can I help? Well, this is one of those ways. So check them out. Town of Selma, Indiana. They're looking for volunteers tomorrow morning to meet at Selma Elementary outside of door 10 at 9 a.m. To find out more, go to the Town of Selma, Indiana Facebook page. Again, not an easy way to make a transition over to Colts conversation. We've got George Brimmer on the line again. It has been free agency week all week. And George, you know, obviously I've made my thoughts very well known on this program, and I had to kind of walk back some of my comics yesterday about just how fired up I got a little bit fired up, because have we felt like the message has been any different this year from Chris Ballard about the aggressiveness in free agency, or is this kind of what you expected this to be?
It's what I expected. I mean, I thought they were going to take care of their own. I thought that was kind of the way that he was angling, and that's what they did. You know, they went out there and they re-signed pretty much everyone. I think Julian Blackman right now is the one person still out there. We'll see how that turns out. But I think everybody else who, you know, going into the offseason, you were thinking, well, it'd be nice to bring back this player, has been brought back. The question now is, you know, do they have a big swing in them? There's a lot of rumors out there. There's a lot of things that are possible, but we'll see how it goes. I think you've got to obviously, you know, upgrade that defensive backfield before you feel like you're finished with free agency.
George, I'm curious for your opinion. The run it back mentality and doing it this way, is it the route you would go to make this team better for next year? You think this is the right move?
I think it sent a really important message to the locker room. I think everybody in there, if you're going to be a draft and develop team, and that's what the Colts have been since Chris Ballard has been here, you've got to re-sign the guys when they come up, when they've earned it. You know, I think everybody this week who got a new deal is somebody who has gone out, not just on the field, but off the field, in the locker room, been a leader for this football team. And I think what they're banking on is, you were, you know, as they've said, about 20 yards away from a division title last year. And now you're hoping that you're going to have a healthy Anthony Richardson at quarterback for the full season. You're hoping you're going to have a healthy Jonathan Taylor for the full season. You're going to augment this with a draft class that they always feel like it is going to be strong. And that will be enough to take things forward. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think it's in keeping with their philosophy. It's in keeping with the way that Chris Ballard does business. But, you know, so far that's not led to a whole lot of postseason success. 7 years, right. 2 playoff appearances, 1 playoff victory. You know, you can say that had a lot to do with the quarterback position, and that's a solid argument. But now you've got to show that you've got the right guy under center, and that when you do have the right guy under center, this approach can work. We're going to find out a lot about that this year, I think.
And I think the point you just made is exactly where a lot of Colts fans maybe have frustration. Even though you were 20 yards away from being in the playoffs, you didn't make the playoffs with, we've described it over the past several weeks, the schedule you had. Like, I look at the thin line that it is. If you want to put two different teams against the Colts and their philosophies, like Tampa Bay got to the playoffs, and they're kind of doing what the Colts are doing. Difference is they won a playoff game with that group, so they're running it back. I think there's justification there. And then the team that you played in Houston that got you by 20 yards, they won a playoff game, and they said, you know what, hey, we got to upgrade certain positions, so they got a impact running back and an impact defensive end. Whereas the Colts are going out re-signing their own with a team that fell short. Like, is it fair to compare in that regard, George, in your mind?
It's going to be a really interesting comparison these next couple of years, because the Texans have had a really different way of building around a young quarterback. The Colts, you know, also building around a young quarterback, but doing it mostly through the draft. It'll be really interesting to see which of those approaches pays off more, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I'm not as concerned with what the Texans did as a lot of others are, because I think they were already a good team. They're going to continue to be a good team. But they were replacing pieces that were already there. They didn't go out and add a superstar player at a position that was not good for them last year. They lost Jonathan Grenard. They let him walk away. He had 12 sacks last year. They replaced him with a really good defensive end in Daniel Hunter. But it's a move they had to make to kind of stay where they were. I don't think that one pushed them really far ahead. Now, the Joe Mixon deal, that'll be interesting to see. We'll see how much he has left in the tank. The run game last year really was non-existent in Houston. You would think he's going to increase that. That could make C.J. Stroud better. Be interesting to see how they change things there. Tennessee's the one in the division that I'm really right now fascinated by. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but they feel like the boom or bust team this year. They're changing everything. You know, Derrick right. Henry's gone. You bring in Calvin Ridley. You have a new head coach who's obviously an offensive-minded guy coming from the Bengals. They're going to throw the ball a lot more. It feels like if Will Levis works out for them, they could be a team that surprises and really contends in that division this year. And if it doesn't, you know, they could be a team that's struggling. I think they're going to be really, really interesting to watch. And I think Jacksonville is, you know, quietly making some moves on their own. And trying to get back to a spot where, you know, a year ago they were the prohibitive favorite in this division, and now they're trying to prove that they can catch back up with the Colts and the Texans.
And that's part of it, is what the division has done. It's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin there. The other part that I think sticks out to Colts fans, it's an easy target, and maybe an easy target for people like me that have a radio show like this, George, is you just described it. With every team in the division, they've gone out and got a veteran playmaker. So Joe Mixon with Houston, Tennessee gets a new running back in Tony Pollard and Calvin Ridley, and then Gabe Davis, who essentially replaces Ridley, is brought in with Jacksonville, whereas the Colts are sitting back and saying, it feels like saying, we're going to go and get our playmaker in the draft. Your thoughts on that philosophy?
I think they spent quite a bit of money on a playmaker in Michael Pittman. I think we forget that, too. He was already here, so we tend to discount that as much. But he was one of the top wide receivers on the market, and they paid good money to bring him back. I think that was critical for Anthony Richardson. I mean, if you had not brought Michael Pittman back into the fold, I think that it would be really hard to try to sell the idea that you're trying to do what you can to help out this young quarterback. But I think it's probably the right idea. Coming into the offseason, I thought draft offense, sign defense. So that's where I'm really interested to see now. Are they going to go out there and make some moves? They need at least one safety, maybe two, depending on whether or not you're able to bring Julian Blackman back. We'll see how all that plays out. And they really need a veteran corner in there who can help guide that young group. I think that, to me, from a free agent standpoint, that's where I would be focusing if I was in charge.
Okay, so the rumors surrounding Legarius Sneed, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something you'd pull the trigger on?
It's a really complicated situation. I think it's something that would really help the Colts. I think they're in a position right now where you can go make a move like that because of the cap space that they still have, even with everything they've done so far this offseason. And you can, you know, definitely upgrade at a position of need, but also maybe bring a guy in there with championship experience, with a lot of time in the league, who can kind of, you know, we talk about the Joe Flacco move and how he can mentor Anthony Richardson. Legarius Sneed can do that on the field with a guy like Juju Brents, a guy like Jalen Jones, a guy like Dallas Flowers. I think that would be huge. Having him in the same backfield with Kenny Moore and allowing these guys to kind of, you know, lead by example, I think would be terrific for the young crew that's there. The Colts clearly have interest in you know, getting something done there, but it's not going to be easy. It is – you're going to have to, you know, obviously – work out a deal that Kansas City wants to make the trade to begin with, and then you've got to sign him to a contract. It's a complicated thing. I think there's a reason why it's taking as long as it is. Every team in the league is probably trying to do the same math in their head. What's the combination there of what you can give up in draft capital plus paying him, you know, once he gets here? Where's that threshold? I think if it's a second-round pick, as has been reported, and we never know how accurate that is, if the second round pick is as has been reported, if I'm the Colts, I would do that. I don't think you're going to get a cornerback who can impact this roster as much as Sneed could with that second round.
Yeah, it's reported out there. The real holdup is the contract extension. It's not necessarily the Kansas City Chiefs' willingness to give up on Legarius Sneed. Kind of to your point. I'm torn on it because it feels like cornerbacks thrive in the Kansas City system, and Legarius Sneed's a good player. I mean, he made some really good plays and prime plays in the Super Bowl the last couple of years, but the balance of is he worth top dollar there and how much is the system a product of his success, that's always the gamble and the line you have to walk, right?
Absolutely. I think the one thing here for the Colts is Chris Ballard obviously still has a ton of connections in that Kansas City organization, and it's information he'll trust. You know, you can talk with teams all the time and try to find sources, but these are guys that he worked with for a long time. Him and Brett Veach were in that front office together for a number of years in Kansas City. So I think, you know, there's a lot of people in that building, all the way down to probably, you know, strength and conditioning coaches and training room people and people that he would trust that he has a long-time relationship with. So they're probably going to have a better picture of what Legarius Sneed actually is than they would in a lot of other places. That's one reason I thought this might be a move that could happen, because, you know, he's always going to be picky when he does these things. The Forrest Buckner trade happened in part because he's got such a good relationship with John Lynch. You know, we'll see if this is another one of those moves, or if ultimately the Colts decide exactly what you're talking about, that the financial compensation side of it is not something they're comfortable with, you know, given their evaluation of the player.
Okay, George, I got to admit, I can't be all gloomy about the Colts, all right? I know. I asked a lot of questions about the gloomy outlook. I love the Joe Flacco signing. I think that's brilliant.
That was a good move. You know, I think you're trying to get a similar idea to what you have with Gardner Minshew and really upgrade in some ways how much football he's seen. You're going back to that Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan style of quarterback in terms of there isn't a defense out there that Joe Flacco hasn't seen. There isn't a coordinator in the league that he probably doesn't understand what they're trying to do. Having him in that meeting room alone during the week to stop the tape and show Anthony Richardson, hey, when they line up like this, look, it means they're doing this. You know, that's an invaluable piece and something that could really accelerate Anthony Richardson's development. And then if Richardson does miss a game or two, which is going to happen most of the league. I mean, how many guys played 17 games this year? They didn't all just play four, right. But it's rare that you're going to play all 17. If he does miss a week or two, or if you're fortunate enough that week 18 doesn't matter and you don't, and you can go to the backup in that game, you feel like Joe Flacco is a guy who can come in and he showed you this year in Cleveland, get the job done, throw the ball deep. We know that. He's not going to be afraid to let it rip. I think in a lot of ways that was a really good move. And I think that the early numbers said like $8 million. That was with incentives. It's really a $4.5 million deal. I think it's a good price for a guy who could really accelerate your young quarterback's growth.
If I were to have told you in 2015, George, that, hey, by the way, in the next 8 years, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, Phillip Rivers, and Joe Flacco will be on the Colts roster as a quarterback. What would you have said? I mean, it's wacky to think back in 2014, 2015, all these guys were high-level starting quarterbacks in the league.
It's insane. And then Nick Foles and Gardner Minshew, too.
There you go, yeah.
It's nuts. You know, it just shows you how long and crazy this quarterback journey has been. And I think this is really a great bridge. What you're hoping, obviously, is that Anthony Richardson is going to be able to stay healthy and that he's going to learn a lot from Joe Flacco this year. And so that maybe when Anthony Richardson's at the top of the league, as the Colts hope that he will be, he'll be able to go back and talk about how much Joe Flacco helped him in the ways that you hear Patrick Mahomes talk about Alex Smith now.
Right, right. Crazy stuff. It's just beginning. The offseason is upon us. George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin covers the Colts, joins us each and every week. Hey, safe travels up to Michigan City. You'll be a part of the WHBU coverage of the Liberty Christian Semi-State. Safe travels with Zach, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, it should be a fun one on Saturday. Thanks a lot.
That's George Bremer with us. We are over. When we come back, Rob Fisher with us talking high school basketball after this. Final segment of a Friday show here on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you by Sheriff Goslin Roofing. Your roof is there to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Goslin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. Glad you're with us on the program today, and we're always glad when we can be joined by Rob Fisher, our analyst on high school broadcasts, is on his way to Lafayette as we speak. Rob Fisher, how's the drive, my friend?
So far, so good, Marcus. As I mentioned before we went on the air, I got caught in the wonderful world of 465 for a few minutes, but that thinned out, and I'm on 65 now, and all is good.
Well, the excitement's built this week for sure. With both of these opportunities, and I would imagine the excitement comes from the form of, I mean, it's possible these two are the favorites in their respective semi-states.
Well, there's no question, you know, and I know you talked about those Sagarin ratings earlier in the show. And if you believe in those, and if you go by them, they are. Wapahani is the favorite. Delta, you know, maybe a slight underdog to South Bend St. Joe. But obviously, you know, we all know how crazy this tournament can be. You got to win tomorrow in the morning and then worry about that championship game later on. But anything can happen, and we've seen it already.
Well, we've talked a lot about the balance that Wapahani showed on last Saturday against Tipton. And, you know, I described it as this, and maybe I haven't described it to you in our conversations over the last several days, but, like, I called it a breakthrough, and it sounds strange from a team that's lost two games that you're like, really, a breakthrough like that? But, I mean, the breakthrough of not just the balance, but the breakthrough of the mentality. Maybe I'm not describing it as well, but like when I say there was a breakthrough last Saturday, do you kind of get where I'm coming from on that?
Yeah, I think I understand maybe a breakthrough to us because we just haven't seen a lot of it, but I don't think it's a surprise to Matt Luce and his staff.
No.
because he mentioned it in the postgame show. He watches those guys hit shots all the time in practice. So that part of it, I don't think he was surprised by. But, you know, the M.O. On Wapahani was pretty much, and we saw it in their two losses, if you hold Isaac in check, don't let him get to his average and then shut everybody else down, you've got a chance to win that game. But here of late, especially last Saturday, they did hold Isaac in check, kept him under his average, but everybody else really picked it up all over the floor.
Right.
And when you've got the threat of putting at least four kids on the floor and many times all five of them that can hit the three-point shot, you're dangerous, and they all came to life on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think about in my head why it feels like a breakthrough, but I felt like it was a breakthrough based on the fan reaction in front of us. Not that they didn't expect to win, but the fan reaction had that little bit of sense of, wow, this is a huge moment. And there's something about capturing that momentum that can help you in a game. Quite frankly, tomorrow morning, you got to play well to beat North Judson. You got to play well to beat anybody this time of the year, but you'll be expected to win. It's different.
Yep, and I think you really nailed it earlier when you said if Wapahani just does Wapahani things tomorrow morning, they're going to be fine. I really think they'll be fine. Again, you never know what could happen. North Judson is a hard-nosed team. Obviously, when people will notice this, if they're going tomorrow or if they're watching, they've got a couple kids that look like bodybuilders. They are so thick through the shoulders. And I know that's a big football school, and I'm sure most of them play football. But these are hard-nosed, get-after-it kids. Low scoring, they're content with pretty much just running a patient offense. I think they've only had the two times they've won games in the 60s, twice this year. Only one time have they given up 60. So the score is going to be right there in the 40s and 50s if they have it their way. So they're hard-nosed. Wapahani is going to have to bring their A game.
Yeah, no question. Rob Fisher with us, our analyst on high school broadcast. He'll be with Jimmy Cook tomorrow for the morning contest of Wapahani versus North Judson at Lafayette Jeff High School for the 2A North opener at Semi-State. Now moving to 3A North at Logansport. You saw it firsthand, the Fort Wayne Concordia Delta Regional Final, and the sigh of relief aspect. I spoke to Mark Detweiler earlier this week, and they felt like they got stagnant offensively. I think everybody could have seen that, but defensively they loved the way they defended, but you know, opportunistic to win it like you did at the end, but you do have to feel a bit of a sigh of relief there.
No question about it. And I think we even, when you mentioned Coach Detweiler and the stagnant offense, I think we even mentioned during the broadcast, it just seemed like they were dribbling a lot more than they normally do, just a lot of dribbling out front. But their defense is going to keep them in games, you know, and that certainly happened on Saturday. And then you make big plays down the stretch. I think both the Fernies hit big shots. Jordan hit one in the lane. Jaden hit a huge three. And I thought Bronson Evers was fantastic off the bench. He hit a big three, had a big block shot. And then you make, like I said, make those plays at the end when your defense has kept you in it and find a way and move on. And I ran into Blake Jones in the hall after that game, and I told him, you know, sometimes when a team plays that way and you get the breaks at the end and you figure out a way to win, all of a sudden, maybe this weekend, they explode again. They figure out, well, we got to play a little bit better and figure some things out. And don't be surprised if they don't just jump all over Fairfield tomorrow.
Well, and both of these teams want to play well defensively. They're two of the top teams in defensive points allowed. So Fairfield likes to play like Delta. I think the difference is Delta has the offensive capabilities to really put it on a team if they're feeling it on that given day.
Yeah, and experience matters too. You know, they've been through this last year, and you would know better than I if Fairfield had gone through the semi-state last year. I don't think they did. So experience will count too. So that's a huge one in Delta's favor.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I really, really do. So you and Jimmy Cook, pregame at 9:25 at Lafayette. Jeff, myself and Coach Matt Moulton will be right after you as we bring you both semi-state matchups for Wapahani and Delta in the boys' basketball state finals. Rob, look forward to listening to you. Safe travels to Lafayette, and we'll be in contact tomorrow for certain.
Same to you, Mark. Tell Coach Moulton I said hello.
Will do, will do. That's Rob Fisher with us. I'm excited to listen to the broadcast tomorrow, and of course ours that we'll have of Delta and Fairfield. So both of those games on Blake FM tomorrow, 102.9, 96.7. If you need any info on how to get all of that info coverage, visit our Facebook page, Twitter pages. Thanks to George Bremer. Thanks to Rob Fisher. We're back with you Monday at 4. Have a good weekend.